Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
How would you describe today's show, Stu?
Quite the adventure. I would say quite the adventure. We had some debate reaction early on and a lot of passion there for various reasons, mostly about how terrible it was. Mm-hmm. Then we talked to a father who had his kids stolen from him by basically
the state.
And
went to prison for it. Mm-hmm. Went to prison because he wouldn't abide by a gag order, nor would I.
Nor would I.
If I were in his situation, nor would I.
Nor would any, no. I think, good parent.
No.
And then we also talked to a family that honestly has been kind of throughout the history of the show. I mean, going back years and years and years and years and years, a family from Germany who came here because they were getting persecuted for their desire to homeschool their children and not have them taught nonsense. And that's illegal, apparently, in Germany. So they were brought here. We went through a terrible thing to keep them here back in the day.
But they came the right way.
And they are upstanding citizens, good citizens. And now, years and years later, in what seems like an act of revenge by the government, they are now being tossed out.
I think today's show is a good example of me coming the closest to losing my mind.
You almost, the end of the show, you almost walked out. I was surprised you stayed, honestly.
And I'm a professional.
That's somewhat true, but also, the only thing that could keep you here was meatball. And we talked about meatball at the end.
An amazing story of just one of the dumbest women. Or was she? Or has she been trained very, very well?
Mm, or poorly.
We'll give you all this and so much more, brought to you in part by Relief Factor. Look, you're in pain, get out of pain. Oh, yeah, easy for you to say. No, it's not easy for me to say. I was in pain for a long, long time, excruciating, agonizing pain. I couldn't use my hands most of the time. My hands would be in so much pain and cramp up. And, I mean, we had signals for the camera people when I would be on TV. Going back to the Fox days, you got to take the picture, either get it off of me or take it from the shoulders up because my hands are going to start doing things that I don't want anybody to see. That's how bad it was. I started taking Relief Factor after trying everything else. I can paint today. I can play the piano today. I got my life back. Just try it. 70% of the people who try it go on to order more month after month. It's a $19.95 3-week quick start. See if it works. If it's not working in 3 weeks, probably not going to work for you. 800, the number 4, Relief. 800, the number 4, Relief, or relieffactor.com.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
I love the primary season.
Oh, as we say, primary season is the dumbest season.
Yeah.
So everyone hates everyone. Everyone thinks everything you say is some secret signal against whoever you want to vote for. That's where we are in primary season.
Can I tell you, if you went to, like, I don't know, maybe if you had to debate your way in to be homecoming king and queen and prince and princess at, like, let's say Beverly Hills High.
Mm.
I think that's kind of the debate that I saw last night. A bunch of privileged people on the stage, all yelling, all talking over each other, not stopping, no reason, all looking at, like, one of the journalists at the same time, just talking. Shut up. All of you, shut up. My gosh, it was such a waste of time and such an insult. The biggest loser last night was Fox. That was disgusting. And I'm doing a TV show tonight you don't want to miss. We're going to be talking about. I think Fox is dead. I think the GOP is dead. I think it's dead. Dead. GOP is the one that picked Fox and Univision to host that thing. Why? Why? Why would they do that? Why? It was Fox Business News. Do you know how many people watch Fox Business News? Like 12. And many of them are on the second floor of the Fox building. What are you doing? And then you put Univision on with Fox? I mean, I understand NBC Univision because it's the same crap. Oh, my gosh. I couldn't take. They lost control of that debate within 10 minutes.
That was rough. I mean, I guess the theory here is that they don't want to give debates to MSNBC and CNN. So they're like, well, who else do we have?
I don't know.
Right. I know what you're going to say.
Yeah.
Like maybe The Blaze?
Maybe The Blaze. Maybe you give it to The Blaze Daily Wire and we do it together.
Yeah.
Maybe. What are you doing,
instead,
GOP?
Instead, they're like, well, the only ones who don't totally hate us are Fox and Fox Business. So let's go there over and over and over.
Oh, my gosh. It was horrible.
And like, I don't, you know, like I like Dana Perino. I think she, I don't think it was necessarily the moderators because it was conservatives here, right? Maybe we should blame the people for their actions. And the people on stage all made the same decision that I wasn't aggressive enough. I need to talk more.
No.
And they all talked.
Except for one.
Two. I would say two. I would say Vivek.
Yes.
Went the opposite way.
No, it's
Mr. Vivek's back in town.
Yeah, hello.
Primary guy sees that Vivek is getting a compliment. He must be a Vivek, a secret agent.
Right. Okay, so.
And I thought DeSantis was more aggressive, but generally speaking, kept within the lines.
I think so, too. I think that's why I said he, out of all that appeared, and the only reason why the big winner was Donald Trump last night was because he didn't have any of the stink on him. If he would have been there, it would have been worse.
Yeah.
Would have been worse. But he wasn't there. He made the right decision. He didn't show up. And that thing devolved into a 12-year-old food fight. It was awful.
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 I mean, there was minutes at a time.
Minutes.
When three or four of them were talking.
There was one time, I think all seven of them were talking.
Oh, gosh.
And it was like, awful. What is this?
What is this?
I mean, are we America? This is the lowest low I think we've ever hit in politics. Thank you.
Wait a minute.
No. I mean, in debates. In okay. debates. Not in politics.
I was
going to
say, that's a real.
No, in debates. This was shameful.
It was shameful. And, you know, I get it. Like, Tim Scott, the criticism of him in debate number one is he basically didn't say anything. So right out the gate, Tim Scott, every single question, jumping in, raising his hand, saying, I understand he's trying to solve a specific problem. He's not going to win the presidency if he doesn't solve it. I get why he does that. Doug Burgum. No one knows who Doug Burgum is.
He is, first of all, let me just say this. Every time the camera went to him, it was like, oh my gosh. I mean, he's a Muppet. He doesn't. He is, he's like an avatar or a cartoon. I don't
you
know
mean like
what.
His just appearance-wise?
It's his appearance. You're like, oh, God, what? Just can warn us. Slide into him from Chris Christie or something. My
wow.
gosh.
That's the biggest Chris Christie compliment I think ever his appearance ever, has ever received.
Ever received. And he is, oh, my gosh.
Look, policy-wise is another story. As far as the actual debate goes, and he was, I don't even think he was near the bottom of it. At least he would say things that were kind of coherent, and he wasn't always talking over people. I mean, I'm just saying, as far as in the debate rules, he has really bad planned one-liners that he thinks are going to be great.
Oh, I don't, cut 18. Oh, I don't know what you're talking
so
about.
Rough.
Listen, and I want to look in that camera right now and tell you, Donald, I know you're watching. Oh, you can't help yourself. I know you're watching, okay? And you're not here tonight, not because of polls and not because of your indictments. You're not here tonight because you're afraid of being on the stage and defending your record. You're ducking these things. And let me tell you what's going to happen. You keep doing that, no one up here is going to call you Donald Trump anymore. We're going to call you Donald Duck.
He really wanted that one to land.
He practiced that.
Oh, my gosh.
That is so awful.
That was like the same way Chris Christie felt going to ask a girl to a prom is how he felt right there. And she just said no to his face. It was so sad.
You know, if he wasn't Chris Christie, he didn't have the, you know, corruption thing, which might work for him now. Didn't have the corruption thing in the back. If he had completely different policies, he could have cut through last night.
Yeah.
Because he can command the stage.
Look, again, now I'm going to be, you love Chris Christie. But like, Christie's good at this.
Yes, he's generally good at this.
I mean, again, that was a horrible moment.
Everything else.
That was a horrible moment.
Yes.
I mean, he really, and leading up to it, like that line is so bad at the end of it. But the rest of it is, I think, fair. Like, I think criticizing Donald Trump for not being there is totally fair.
I do,
now,
too.
If I said this last night because I was thinking of you. Glenn Beck runs for president. I'm in a position where I would be the guy behind the stage. And you're up by 40 points. And you go, what should we do with this debate? I'd be like, what are you, nuts? Don't go near that debate. That's what
exactly
I would be telling
right.
you. You're up by 40 points. Stay away. I want
yep.
you to win. That is the whole way I would talk to you about it as
yep.
your advisor.
And if I were advisor for Donald Trump and he was up like that, I'd be saying the same thing.
Yeah.
I wanted him there. I have
right.
questions for Donald Trump. And I think they should be heard in a debate. But I'm not advising him to be in that. That's crazy. He won last night.
By just
because
not showing
of
up.
That, by just not showing up.
I'd say, you know, and that's probably the story for the first two debates, right? Like,
yes,
every day that passes in a race where the gap is 40 points, that there isn't a breakout performance is a win for Donald Trump, right? He's up by a lot. So he doesn't need his own breakout performance. He doesn't need to knock down Vivek Ramaswamy or Ron DeSantis
no.
or Nikki Haley. He just needs to keep surviving. So totally understand it from his perspective when you're talking about winning. You know, there's a part of me, you go back
yep.
to, you know, Ted Williams, this is going to give you a sports reference, Glenn, prepare yourself. Ted Williams was hitting, what, 401?
Yeah, going he was into a great boxer.
Going into the last day of the season, and the manager offered to let him sit and just sit it out. You're hitting 401. It's going to be an amazing achievement. Don't go. What if you go 0 for 3? You might be under 400. Instead, he played, and he went, I think, 3 for 5, and he wound up hitting 403. Like, I want a little bit of that from Trump. I mean, the whole reason
But all
why
you need is three rounds and five, and you're...
No, you're making... Your points are going to be good on this, but I'm just going to hold off
okay.
for 1 second on them. Your sports follow-ups are going to
okay,
be great.
Okay, good. All right.
But the point is, like, what we... You know, if you look at Donald Trump, what do Republican voters love about Donald Trump? How many times did they say it? Because he fights, right? This isn't him fighting. This is him being like, well, it's smart for me to avoid the fight. And I would like him to be there. And I think it was fair for both DeSantis and Christie to hit him on that. How Christie did it was just so cringeworthy.
Correct.
It was unbelievable.
And I think DeSantis, the way he did it, I thought was
good.
Good.
I thought that was good.
I thought that was good.
It wasn't hatred towards Trump.
No.
It wasn't Trump is the worst guy in the world. But hey, you know, like if he wants your votes, he should show up to these things. And I think that's a fair criticism. I don't
Except
know that I wouldn't listen to it if I was Trump's advisor.
If Donald Trump would have been there last night, everyone would have in the press blamed him for the chaos.
Yes.
It shows you don't need Donald Trump for the chaos.
Oh no.
That chaos was there all by itself.
Well, it was
all by itself.
It was a sense of desperation, was it not, Glenn? These people
oh.
they're all looking here, they're all saying, look, we're down by 40 and 50 points. We can't break out of this. I mean, and people were talking about how well Nikki Haley did last time. She went from like 2 to 7%. You know, like this is the game that's being played here. They're all in a getting an increasing amount of desperation. They need money, most of them. And so they all decided at the same time, what I need to do is just talk through the moderators. And sometimes that's successful. We've seen Trump do it successfully. We've seen Newt Gingrich do it successfully in previous campaigns.
Yeah, but they don't all
do
it.
They all did it. They all made the same decision on the same day.
Yeah.
And
I feel bad for Ramaswamy because he's the only guy that went the other way.
Yeah, he did.
He was the only guy that said, I mean, and Scott smashed him on it. I mean, just, and it was a great moment for Scott.
Which one?
When Ramaswamy said, look, we're all decent people here. We're all decent people.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
And he tried to offer a fig leaf to everybody or an olive branch I don't know why you'd hand a
some fruit or vegetable.
Yes, he throws an avocado their way.
Right. Yeah.
And they said fig leaf, like they were all naked. I'm sorry. I said, whoa.
Yeah. Chris Christie was on stage. Watch your mouth.
So he tries to be kind and reverse because he was too
aggressive last time.
So he learns his lesson and he decides, you know what? I'm going to go this way. And they just slit his throat.
Yeah, they did.
Just slit his throat.
Scott said, you know, you called us all bought and paid for last time, which by the way, for all the people saying we're Vivek people,
we both said criticized. It was wrong.
I thought that was wrong. I thought it was a bad moment for Vivek last time. And I thought Scott was fair to hit him on that because it was kind of like a blatant flip flop, right? Like it did seem like he was another person, but he was more Vivek, I thought.
Yeah.
That's how Vivek has been in interviews with us.
Yeah.
He was much more like he was last night.
Here's cut 17. This is Scott.
When we have a conversation about the things that are happening on this stage, we think about the fact that Vivek just said we were all good people. And I appreciate that because last debate, he said we were all bought and paid for. And I thought about that for a little while and said, you know, I can't imagine how you could say that knowing that you were just in business with the Chinese Communist Party and the same people that funded Hunter Biden, millions of dollars, was a partner
this
of yours as
nonsense.
Well. It's not nonsense.
So look, I want to respond. These are good people who are tainted by a broken system. And it's not the fault of anybody who's involved.
Some of us are tainted.
Excuse me.
Shut up, Tim. Shut up.
Just let the guy
talk.
What do we get out of this? You know, someone tweeted this, Glenn, and I was thinking of you because you were one of the first people who really started doing these types of interviews. But like, isn't the debate format basically dead? And shouldn't we look more at like the long form podcast format for these types of things? Like, wouldn't it be much more interesting to have a few of these guys, maybe two at a time, talking about a specific issue in an hour long format with someone who's conservative and knows the issue well from a conservative perspective?
Yes.
Wouldn't we learn so much more from that about these guys? Because you still have to be quick on your feet. But you actually have time to be able to lay out your ideas and show how much knowledge you have about these things. You just did one with Ron DeSantis.
Ron DeSantis, of course you would do it.
No, but you just did one with Ron DeSantis last week. A lengthy interview, an hour, where you were able to go through all of these things. And like you get so much more out of that than this nonsense.
Oh, I got more out of an interview with all of them. I've done all of them except the Muppet at the end of the stage.
Not Chris Christie.
Not Chris Christie. I won't. Well, I mean, you're invited, Chris, but.
How would you do, Doug? Would you get on the Bergamentum train?
No, I wouldn't. it's just a waste of time, gang. Just a waste of time. The only one left, really, and I've done interviews, hour-long interviews with Donald Trump, but not since he was, a candidate.
Right.
And would like to do that. I get more out of that. I got more out of what the Blaze did when we just talked to them for about, 30 or 40 minutes,
each.
One at a time, one right after another. Now, it takes some commitment for you, because it took all day, but you want to know who these people are? That's the way to do it. And they either hung themselves or not.
Yeah, you didn't see Asa Hutchinson on that stage, did you?
No. Uh-huh.
And there's a good part of that is because of the way he played to the audience in Iowa.
I didn't learn a single thing last night. Not one.
That was
except
really bad.
Our republic is just out of control. Just out of control.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
As we said yesterday, I'm not going to give you this man's name for fear of even more reprisals by his government in British Columbia. I'm just going to call him Dad. Welcome to the program. Welcome back, Dad.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. How are you today?
Well, I'm good. I'm hoping you come with some advice and some answers for us, because you didn't win the fight. You haven't talked to your daughter now in 3 years because they gave her a choice, right?
They did. The ruling from the courts back in 2019 was that she had the right to inject herself with testosterone and pretty much do whatever she wanted to do as if she was an adult. They took that right away from me. And And of course, once that happened, this is where I kind of left off a bit yesterday, as I dropped my two lawyers, and I had a choice to make at that point in time. You know, we weren't going to pursue it to the Supreme Court of Canada, but I was sitting on something that was super important that I thought everybody should know, you know, and so I had to decide what to do with that information. Do I follow the courts and continue to be gagged and kind of watch other children get mutilated when I know what I know? And do I have a choice in that way? And I felt that I did. And I didn't feel bound by court orders when the court orders were so harmful to children. And so, you know, I was even talking with some media at that time. And I remember one fellow was saying, you know, this is probably your opportunity to become a leader in this. You know, make a big, bold decision and just move forward. And so I did. I had a lot of people that were telling me to just stay quiet. We'll find another case. We'll figure this out. Maybe we'll get... And I thought, no. And so I did. I broke all the gag orders I was under. I went and did a whole bunch of interviews to the point where I wasn't the only one in court at that time. There was media people in court that they were going after. And letters were being sent all over the place telling people to take content down. And in Canada, all the, you know, letters were sent to Google and all Canadian content was removed. You couldn't find the story up here anymore. And so, yeah, obviously being brought back into court, and I didn't stop even in court. It infuriated the courts because I would come in and a new story would be coming out the morning I'm back in court again. And the judge is like, what's this new thing? And at that time, they also believed I had the power somehow to get the stuff all taken down. And at that point, I was representing myself. And I said, well, oof. the horse is out of the barn, right? You can't, you know, the toothpaste is out of the toothpaste tube. But yet the expectation was on me that I could put it all back in, that somehow I could go back to the back when I was being gagged and following the gag orders. But that wasn't going to happen. I mean, the story went essentially around the planet. You know, people wanted to...
I don't understand how governments think that they have the right to gag you on something that is affecting your life in this way. That somehow or another, they can tell you, here's the punishment, we disagree with you, and now you can never, ever talk about it. That's insanity. Insanity.
Well, that's what I thought. I mean, this is their argument. Is they're saying, well, the reason we're doing this is we're protecting your child because you're harming her by telling the story and sharing her medical information, is what they said. And so in their minds, but this isn't what it is. They're protecting their agenda, but they don't tell you that part. That's what they're actually doing, but they're pretending they're actually caring about your child. No, they're not. You know, once your child is out of high school, the school is gone. The government's gone. They don't care if you stay transgender or not. The pharmaceuticals care. But beyond that, you're on your own. You're only on a pedestal while you're in government sort of care, if you want to call schools that, which it kind of is. And so, So to me, I thought, well, I'm going to break these gag orders. But that's why they did it. They did it to protect the agenda. Because they knew if parents knew, and if anybody knew, you know, generally speaking, you're going to say, why would you sterilize a child? Why are we allowing this to happen? But if you do it behind parents' backs and you intimidate them, which was a tactic. I mean, remember when I broke gag orders, this is like 4 or 5 years ago. It's not even today where things have changed to a great degree from where it was when I did this. Yeah, they would take your job. I mean, I talked to so many parents. They're terrified. They're like, we just go with it. We don't like it, but we'd rather keep our child. And of course, they play the suicide card.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, this is the only card that they've got. And it's so much baloney because my daughter even told me. She's like, Dad, I'm going to commit suicide. I said, oh, no, you're not. And she starts laughing. She's like, no. But she goes, but that's what the doctor tells me to say. She's like, I have to say that. I'm told to do that. That's how I get treatment. So the whole thing is a scam.
You spent 70 days, would have been a lot longer, but the Court of Appeals turned things around. So you spent 70 days in prison.
I did.
You can, they're still thinking the general, the Attorney General of Canada could appeal the decision. They have until early October to appeal it and put you back in prison.
That's right. The Attorney General of British Columbia. Yeah.
So
he can push it into federal Supreme Court of Canada.
Do you think that's going to happen?
I haven't heard anything. You know, again, this is the first in Canada, is that they took a civil case and turned it into a criminal case. So what happened was, is as I mentioned in my first BC Court of Appeal ruling, they took it from a criminal matter down to a civil matter. Well, the judge deliberately on his own, not even under request from the lawyers who were opposing me, because he asked him, he goes, would you like to turn this into a criminal contempt of court case? And they said no. And he says, well, what does you know, my daughter say? And that lawyer said, no, she's also not asking for that to happen. But then the judge handed it over to prosecution services anyways, and they turned the civil case into a criminal case. So this is how hard the government is coming after me. So when you ask, will they take this to the Supreme Court of Canada? I wouldn't be surprised.
In case you missed that, where you can go and help him fight his legal battle on this, go getfunding.com. Okay, so what did you, first of all, do you regret taking this on at all?
You know, in hindsight, looking back, I don't. People have often asked me that question, and I don't regret it because I look at all the change. You know, it may have been a more difficult situation if, you know, nothing had changed at all, and I was just beating my head against the wall, but clearly, you know, you know what's going on in the U.S. I mean, there are some provinces now up in Canada that are starting to push back on this stuff.
Right.
And so I'm glad to see what I'm seeing. You know, I look at it this way. And of course, I don't expect everyone to do what I did. I mean, this is a little bit of you don't have that expectation. But, you know, in Canada, I look at this trifecta of death. We have abortion, sterilization, and euthanasia. They're going to start euthanizing kids as young as 12 in this country very soon. And
for those of you who don't know, that's not hyperbole. That is actually happening. And the kids can just say, I'm depressed. And the doctor can then say, I can help you with that death if you'd like, as early as 12. Anyway, go ahead.
That's right. Yeah, so as parents now are finding out after the fact that their kids are being sterilized, parents are going to get a call saying, yeah, your child's at the funeral home. And, you know, they did it under mature consent. So what I sort of came up with is what I call the trifecta of pushing back. And that to me was, you know, get into the courts, fight in the courts, you know, get into the media, get attention out, because it's about educating people, making people aware. And last, and the hardest one, which is finally starting to happen here, and it's been happening in many states, is legislation, get stuff passed. And that's the most difficult one, but it's starting to happen as well. And so, you know, I say, you know, I was looking at the numbers the other day, and we have just under, I think, 8 billion people in the world. And so I thought, you know, I'm just going to add up, you know, the Catholics, the Protestants, the Muslims, the Jewish, and it's well over 4 billion. And I'm thinking, even if people of faith were true to their beliefs, we wouldn't be in this mess.
Correct.
Like, how is the minority pushing us around? And why are so many churches even failing on this matter? And, you know, I always say to people, you know, it's not for us to follow our children into hell. It's for us to pull our children out of hell and back towards heaven. And yet so many parents will just be like, well, I'm just going to live with this. I don't want my child to not like me. Well, that's not proper parenting. You know, parenting is tough love. And you don't just allow your child to do whatever they want to do. And so when I say to people, what can you do? Number one is parent. You know, be a proper parent. Don't give into this stuff. To me, that's critical. I mean, this is what they're trying to destroy, is your families and the relationships that you have.
So your daughter is 19. You haven't spoken to her for 3 years. Last you saw her, she loved you. She shared things with you privately. You had a good relationship, it seems. then
you, her and I were close.
And so you don't have that relationship now. If she comes back to you in, you know, a few years and she says, Dad, I'm glad I did that. And I'm a boy now. I've taken all the hormones and everything else. Will you use her name that you gave her, or will you use the name she is taking? How are you going to deal with that?
Yeah, I've thought about it. I never want to speak, you know, in a delusion. I will never call my daughter a he ever.
Mm-hmm.
I can assure you of that. But the approach I think I would take is I just get around it. I won't use anything. I'll just say you. I'll just be more like first person. Because I, at the same time, my conscience can't allow me to use a male pronoun for a female. But at the same time, you know, it's not even out of respect, I guess, because I don't respect when people do this, but just to avoid, you know, a clash, I suppose I would just say, hey, you, as an example. But yeah, it's a difficult one because I talk to many people about it, and a lot of them will call their daughters he's, because that's what they want. And
I think I'm with you. I would call, I would use a name is just a name. You know, Alex can go either way. So a name is just a name, but you know, denying the reality, because if I go in, if I had to take my daughter into a hospital for something going wrong, I wouldn't say, no, that's a boy. I would immediately say, this is a girl. She's transitioned, but she's a girl. 'Cause that would be important to know for the doctors. You can never deny that. Never.
No, and that's what's silly right now is that, you know, one thing that my daughter was allowed to do back in 2019 was she was allowed to change her vital statistics with the federal government.
That's insane.
And so what you're seeing is all of a sudden you're seeing in the stats is you're seeing, you know, girls that have, you know, cancers that only men can have.
Yeah.
Like prostate cancer. Like, it's ridiculous stuff. It's ridiculous stuff, but.
What is the one thing that you would give advice on not doing, the thing that you are glad you didn't do or wish you hadn't have done?
Well, I see two camps of people. I see those that sort of follow, I would call it the Martin Luther King Jr. model, and those that kind of follow the Malcolm X model. I tend to be in the Martin Luther King Jr. Club in that regards.
Me too.
And what I'll see people, and again, it gets trendy because it's good for clicks as well, right? You'll see people going in and just stirring it up, like just getting in people's faces and just being very aggressive. It's both ways. Trust me, Antifa and all that.
Yeah.
I mean, I saw them last Wednesday. There was a big march, Canadian-wide march for kids, to save kids. And sometimes it's just not worth antagonizing.
Correct.
And that way, I think I've accomplished a lot more by going through the courts, doing things that way, then, you know, if I'm deliberately seeking out places where I know the trans, like, collect themselves, like, I'm not going to go to a gay bar and start preaching about
how
much I don't like transgenderism.
All right.
With kids.
Let me tell you, I have an awful lot of respect for the way you have handled this. I can't imagine what it has been like for the last few years or what is still yet to come. This could help put you back in jail, just this interview, and thank you for your courage. If you would like to help him fight, his attorneys are expensive, gogetfunding.com. Gogetfunding.com. Search for BC Father Fighting Medical Transitioning.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck Program.
All right. Uva Romaika is the dad. He is also with Kevin Bowden. He is a homeschool legal defense association attorney. Did I get any of the story wrong, Uva?
No, it was all right. Thank you for having me on. The only thing that was different was wrong was the initial day when we, or year when we came, was 2008.
2008.
We have been here for 15 years now. Yes.
Okay. And I remember we talked to you early on because your case was pending, I think, at the time. And you have lived now here for 15 years. You have been good, solid citizens. You have jobs. You're not depending on the government, correct?
That's right, yes.
And what happens to you if you go back to Germany? What happens to you and your family?
Yeah, since our two youngest ones that were born here in the United States would come with us, of course. They are now 10 and 12 years old in fifth and seventh grade. And we would homeschool them in Germany. We would face the same, as you said earlier, persecution with custody, losing custody, and fines, and possibly jail time, and all these things. That would be the same as before we left. So there wouldn't be any way to homeschool in Germany.
And why are you homeschooling in Germany? What is this really all about?
Well, we have several reasons, but initially we started homeschooling because our two oldest children, who at that time were in school for 2-3 years, their personality changed. They became withdrawn. They developed headaches, stomach aches. Doctors couldn't tell that there was any physical reason. It was all because of bullying and having fear to go to school. And then later on, we found out that also what they were taught at school was diametrically against what we as Christians believed. So there were so many reasons we didn't want them to go there again. And once we actually started homeschooling, they relaxed. They became their old selves again. And they are happy children now and all grown up. I mean, these are all grown up, have good jobs here, and so everything turned out well for them. We wanted to do the best for our children and still want to do that.
And so you have two older children that married Americans.
Yes.
And they're being deported as well?
Yes, because they applied for citizenship, but the paperwork hasn't gone through yet, so it's still in the process. So they are now all included in the deportation order.
Okay, so let me talk to your attorney, Kevin. Kevin works for HSLDA. It is a nonprofit organization making homeschooling possible and making sure they're defending the homeschoolers. Kevin, what is happening here?
Well, Glenn, thanks for having us on. I know you've been supporting his family for many, many years, going all the way back to 2010, 2013, and we appreciate that. You know, we don't know what's going on. What we do know is they were told to come back in 4 weeks and to bring their passports to start self-deportation. We also, of course, know that ICE, you know, has the ability to execute prosecutorial discretion and to not deport the family. So we know what they've been told to do, and we know what's in the authority of ICE to do, and for some reason that we don't have yet, they've been told to get ready to go.
All I can think of is, I mean, what would happen if they went on vacation and, you know, in Texas and were staying at a friend's house? I mean, what would happen?
Well, you know, we don't know. I mean, they are under this order of supervision that they've been under for the last 10 years, which does require them to show up to these ICE meetings. So they've been directed to come back, and they have an obligation per this order of supervision to show up. And, you know, I mean, Uwe and Hannah have been law-abiding individuals in this country since the day they set foot on American soil. And if you know this family like I do, they will do nothing but comply with the law, because that's the type of character that this family has.
I have to tell you, I'm so disgusted by this. This is truly a family that needs asylum. They don't have the First Amendment in Germany. We have it here to protect people. This is what it means to bring in those who are persecuted, not the hundreds of thousands of young men without families coming across our border in the middle of night. They did it the right way. And this, I tell you, Kevin, this bothers me so deeply. When I first heard this story a couple of weeks ago, I think I said this on the air. It was a very dark day for me. I had a really hard time going on, because I thought, if this government, with everything that is out of control, has the time to take this family down, they have such malice that it that they're doing things that we can't even imagine. If they're coming after this family, that's malice. And it is not good for any American.
Well, and you know, Glenn, it's inconsistent with the secretary, with the you know the Department of Homeland Security's own policies. I mean, there's guidance memorandum from 2021 from Secretary Mayorkas, and the three priorities are threat to national security, threat to public safety, and threat to border security. So, I mean, you tell me, where does the Ramayka family fall into these three priorities? I mean, they are the lowest of the low in terms of being here in the United States. So, you know, my thought is, just follow your own priorities. They're good priorities, but why are we not putting the resources of the U.S. government
so
to actually enforce the priorities that they have that they've identified?
So, what's the plan?
Well, we've got a petition we're circulating. We hope to present that to President Biden.
Oh, jeez, we're there.
Well, it's to demonstrate broad support. Of course, you know, we want to just demonstrate that the country is behind this family. Representative Harshberger has filed a private bill in the House of Representatives that's pending before the House Judiciary Committee. We would like members of Congress to support that private bill. They can't co-sponsor, but they can support it. And then Jim Jordan in that committee or subcommittee can request a report from ICE with this bill that would effectively be a stay on any removal proceedings. So we're asking the Judiciary Committee, the House Judiciary Committee, to request that report. Tell ICE to tell them what's going on. Why are you deporting this family? What's going on? Give us the backstory. Give us the reason. And that would provide some temporary reprieve, at least to the Ramayka family. And then long term, we would love a private bill in the Senate as well. And, you know, those are a couple of the angles that we're looking at right now, which would allow them to stay and to continue their life here as we pursue some longer term strategies.
Okay, so here's, if you're listening now, I mean, if you're not listening, then how are you hearing me? But if you're listening now, I want you to go to hslda.org/Romika, which is R-O-M-E-I-K-E. Rome Ike is how you spell that. hslda.org/Rome Ike and sign this. I am on the website right now, and I am going to sign my name to it. I never sign petitions, but I will sign a petition for this family. This is totally outrageous. What else can we do to help this family?
Well, I mean, Uwe can speak as well, but I mean, what he would say also is pray. This is a faith-filled family. They love the Lord. And, you know, as Hannah has told me many, many times, I mean, we appeal to the Most High, and the Most High can take action and supernaturally intervene. And so I know from their hearts, that's something that everyone, regardless of whether they sign, donate, whatever, that's something they can do.
Can I invite them? I'm saying this without any knowing of my schedule at all here, so I apologize to my production staff. But I would like to invite the family, especially the kids that were born here and the older kids. I would like to interview them and make sure that people see this family and what you're really all about. Can we get you guys to come in for that?
We would love to, yes. Thank you.
I have done more apologizing to foreigners for my country in the last 5 to 8 years that I thought I would never have to do this. We have done so many immoral things. We have done so many things against God. We have so lost our way, we don't even know who we are anymore. And my apologies for what our country is doing to you and your family. This is absolutely immoral, and I thank you for being people that still love our country despite what we've done.
Yes. And we love the American people, and it's really a minority that are the bad people. I think most of the Americans are good people and believing people, Christian people. And we are very thankful for all the support through prayer and people who loved on us when we first came here. So we feel very blessed to be here. Thank you for your all support.
You bet. Thank you. We'll be in touch. Guys, thank you so much. It's hslda.org/Romeike, which is Rome Ike, R-O-M-E-I-K-E. I have to tell you, this is one I will go and camp outside of their house and surround their house with like-minded, loving Christian people who will just not break arms on our knees. We just go and kneel around their house in droves, and we lock arms, and we just pray for this family. And if they have to haul, if they have to haul me to jail so they can get to that family, so be it. I've had enough. I've had enough. And I don't want to be a part of anything that is violent, is trying to overthrow anything. But there comes a time where we have got to stand or kneel. Begging and relying on the protection of divine providence.
One of the best measures of how corrupt a country is how rich its leaders get while they're in office. They're not so good at passing laws or governing, but they're great at investing.
Imagine if every American could make money off of war.
In 103 days, that position ends up gaining around 103%. So she made, you know, $2 million plus her original two, so $4
million. I signed, co-sponsored a bill and made too much voluminous flair over it that I wouldn't be seated. So I shut up. The threats that fly around are just absolutely insane.
The Blaze Originals team traveled to Washington, D.C., home to one of the most brilliant financial minds in the world, Nancy Pelosi. In our documentary, Bought and Paid For, How Politicians Get Filthy Rich, we spoke to Reps Matt Gaetz and Chip Roy, George Santos, and the bane of D.C. elites, Unusual Whales, to expose how our elected officials are beating the stock market and, more importantly, what we can do. To watch today, go to congressgetsrich.com and use code RICH to get $30 off an annual subscription to Blaze TV.